Welcome, everyone, to RB1 : A Fantasy Football Podcast, part of the Fake Teams Podcast channel. I am the consummate professional, rom-com aficionado, conductor of the now completely dead and defunct Den Fungus hype train, worshiper of N'Keal Harry, friends with the Oracle, loather of the Blind Zebra Confederation of the NFL, constant doubter of Alvin Kamara, and would like kindly for all of you to wear a mask so that we can watch Cam Newton remind the NFL just how good he is, your humble host, Pete Rogers, and I am joined by some of the guys. We have WNBA hot take machine, El Saboteur, the captain of the Buccaneers bandwagon, proud father of Quentin Nelson, Scotty Miller fanboy, according to Jimmy Graham, the best cornhole partner in the world, the coach whisperer, the wine sipperer, the Will Dislier, working girl Jordan Smith, and fantasy football's premier internet doctor, the biggest 49ers fan you know, Larry Fitzgerald's lone admonisher, the number two Walter Sobchak, but number one Tarzan, fan of what scientists lovingly call, quote, facts, the teacher of the if you're not cheating, you're not trying mentality, and thinks your favorite team is run by donkeys, the ginger, slightly mustachioed man, dare I say, Nick Botterford. Guys, how are we doing today?
Good, Pete. How you doing?
Good. I thought, you know, we are approaching the time period where we're going to come back with two a week podcasts. And with that, you know what? Let's roll out the full introductions. Let's get people really to know who we are. And let's spend, you know, the solid first 2 minutes of the show just talking about all of our accolades. I feel like that's how you do when you got two shows a week. That's what happens.
I was going to say, did you like dig deep back into the vault and just pull out every single identifier that you've ever called us?
Yeah, I think a long time ago, probably at the beginning of this season, so like at the end of last year, I think I went back and kind of collected all of the different titles that I've ever given anyone, and then I built a document of it. And my initial thought was like, all right, we'll just like roll out two or three a week and I'll like fluctuate between them. And this way we get to like all the fun references. And then I completely forgot about the document, recreated all of our new introductions, just what we've had for the show initially. And then today when I was doing notes, I was on my iPad and I stumbled upon that document and I was like, oh man, some of these bringing back some real, real tender memories of way earlier iterations of the show. And I was like, well, we gotta, let's at least bring it back for one episode. Maybe we'll never do the full titles ever again. But I thought, you know what, for this one show, let's at least bring them all back and bask in the glory that is 191 episodes, you guys. It's pretty good.
It's a lot of work to look up introductions for us.
Well, what else am I
doing
in my time?
Tell you, I don't like any of them. Now you just got to start from scratch. I want 10 new ones next week.
Sounds good. I'll get on it. I'll get right away. Awesome. Well, we've got a lot of actual NFL news to kind of get to, and we are going to start as we're now into August. And like I said, I don't know if it will be this week. I think maybe this week, but at the very least, soon we will be starting to go back to twice a week shows, and that signals, even if it seems everything is running on track, so we will start treating as if the NFL season is going to be starting in September, which means fantasy drafts are going to be happening pretty soon for all of you out there. And so we are going to start doing deep dives into each division. So obviously today we are going to talk the South. We're going to do the AFC and NFC South and kind of give an overview of those divisions as you get ready to draft moving forward into August. It's kind of crazy, you guys. In my longest term league, I guess, like I'm the commissioner for it, and I haven't even like reached out to everyone about when we're going to do things. It just feels surreal to be like, I guess it's time to start doing fantasy things. Like, you know, I feel like for so much of this, the show in this off season, we've all been kind of talking like hypothetically, here's how it happens. And it feels weird to have like that time period of like actual action needing to be taken kind of approaching.
Yeah, I don't know who you guys play with, but I know for all of my home leagues, the general tenor, I play with mostly assholes, and the general tenor of like trying to like wrangle these guys into getting ready for the season is like, it borders on either like zero enthusiasm or leave us alone. There isn't even going to be a season. There's a handful of guys who are like, this is awesome. But yeah, it seems like most folks don't think a season is going to happen. And I don't know what the hell to think. I don't know how any sports league can survive without doing a bubble. But yeah. I think it'll start. I don't know if it's going to finish.
Yeah, I've been dealing mostly with like my dynasty leagues. I have like one or two redrafts that I'll occasionally play in every season. But we haven't had any discussions on what we're going to do. We might just have to proceed as normal. While for my other dynasty leagues, I figure out if I want to trade away all my draft capital for 2021 and, you know, try to recoup some players or something like that.
That's actually not a bad strat there, Jordan. Now I'm like, now in my dynasty leagues, I'm like, ooh, maybe this is what, maybe I like this plan. All right. Well, let's talk NFL. Let's talk some news. So we had two veteran players who have found new teams to start off the news. Today, or Monday, breaking news, was veteran tight end Jordan Reed signing with the San Francisco 49ers to an incentive-laden deal. And then last week, LeSean McCoy signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Nick, I don't know how much there really is to say about Jordan Reed. He's not really, hasn't really been able to show that he can stay on the field, and obviously he would be second fiddle to George Kittle. Woo! That's a nice little rhyme right there. So I don't know if you really want to touch on him, but LeSean McCoy to the Buccaneers is certainly a signing worth taking a lot of note and talking about fantasy-wise.
As far as the Jordan Reed thing goes, I think it's an awesome real football move. It's a nice depth signing. Kyle Shanahan will know what to do with him. He coached him in Washington for a long time,
yeah.
Didn't he?
Yeah.
I think he'll be deployed really nicely. I wouldn't be surprised if there's like a DFS week where he's viable. As far as the LeSean McCoy thing goes, I don't know. I mean, he was washed and couldn't do anything in the Chiefs offense last year. To me, it just signals Tom Brady wanted somebody who can pass protect, and I don't know if they're even going to give him the ball. It's not really moving the needle in a positive direction for me. We can work with two-man backfields, but more than that, and it gets real dicey, and I just kind of am interested in swimming for warmer waters on this one. Not really wanting to get a piece of the Bucs backfield unless it's really, really late.
Yeah, I would say like the thing about the LeSean McCoy signing is that it makes me have a little bit of pause on the draft stock of the other backs in that backfield, whether that's Keyshawn Vaughn or Ronald Jones, whoever you think is going to be a little bit better. I feel like this is just kind of a get some talented bodies in camp type of move. I'm not sure how much LeSean McCoy might still have left in the tank. I feel like if Damian Williams decided to sit out in Kansas City, he might have been able to find his way back there for some added depth if Andy Reid wanted him back, but I don't think they were really kicking the tires on that. And yeah, I'm just more so worried about the other running backs' viability for a couple weeks here.
Yeah, this kind of kills my Keyshawn Vaughn hype. I was very excited about him, but it seems, well, both a combination of kind of the COVID offseason and rookies already being a step back in that sense, and then also bringing in LeSean McCoy is not the best sign for him. I'm sure if you watch the tape, LeSean McCoy didn't look great. The dude did average 4.6 yards per carry with Kansas City last year, which is above his career average, so. I think he's still got a little bit something there. And at the very least, he's going to be, I don't think Ronald Jones is really going to challenge him. And maybe Keyshawn Vaughn comes on later in the season. But if LeSean McCoy is like decently healthy, I think there's value there in him. It depends on how much his ADP skyrockets now that this has happened. Like if he's going to be drafted as like an RB2, then that seems, that is a bit rich for me. But if he's like, if you can get him as like kind of a flex option, then I feel like I think
he's going to be the pass protector. I don't think he's going to do much more than that. I think Keyshawn Vaughn will compete with Darrey Ogunbowale to be the pass catcher. And the problem with Ronald Jones is he's one dimensional.
Ronald Jones is trash.
A rusher. And well, but the thing is, I think Jones will get like 12 to 15 carries a game. I don't think he's going to get, he's a bad pass protector and he's not a good pass catcher either. So I think it's just this like role based backfield. And I think Jones will have the highest touch per game count, but I just don't know that it's going to be anywhere near what his ADP will be. And yeah. Anyway, yeah.
I mean, a backfield that's like everyone has their own individual role is a fantasy nightmare because you never want to have to deal with that. Jordan, you brought it up. And so let's jump to it. Next in the news, Damian Williams did say that he was going to opt out of the 2020 season. A few other players have also done that. Devin Funchess and Marquise Goodwin, most notably in terms of fantasy. But Damian Williams obviously is the headliner here because of the fact that being in that Chiefs backfield, a lot of people, he was the kind of cap on Clyde Edwards-Helaire's kind of like the excitement for him. But also people were kind of, I mean, I know we had talked about on the show is like Damian Williams is being a guy like not to sleep on in fantasy because of the fact that he could come in as the incumbent starter and kind of not really let up that job super cleanly and quickly and easily to CEH. Yep, that's right. But with Damian Williams out of the picture, Jordan, like what is the earliest you'd be willing to draft CEH now?
Where is he going right now?
Let's take a gander, shall we? I mean, I don't know how
the Fantasy Pros up.
I do have the Fantasy Pros up. Right now he's going RB15, according to Fantasy and half point PPR according to their collective ADP.
All right. What round is that?
16 is his average pick, which means you're going early middle of the second round.
Dude, if we're looking on Fantasy Pros half point, I'm seeing Clyde as going to number 28 overall.
Yeah, I have him as the RB15. That's what I meant by 15.
Okay.
Let's see here. I always kind of try to judge who might be in and around that area. Because the running back right after him is Leonard Fournette. And I think we're going to talk about how much we don't want Leonard Fournette this season in a few minutes. Chris Carson, could be a question mark. Melvin Gordon is another question mark. I guess I kind of like him where he's at. I'm not going to be one of those guys who thinks that he's just going to be the second coming of Kareem Hunt, though, where he's just like an RB1 you have to draft in the first round. I would sit back and wait for him to come to me in that round.
So I had him and Williams really close. I was super high on Damian Williams, and I mean I think I had Clyde. Like I was way below ADP on Clyde. I think I had him. I'm trying to pull up my top 100 right now, but I think I had him as like the RB20 with Williams as like the RB like 23 or something like that. They were super close. Damian Williams going out is, I think, massive. And so I rocketed him up to, I believe, like running back 11. Because what he's competing with now is Darwin Thompson, who I think is a role-playing bust. DeAndre Washington, who I do really like, and I think that Andy Reid really likes him. Something to keep in mind is that he played 4 years in Oakland, and then when he became a free agent, Andy Reid, you know, watched him as a division rival for 4 years, went out and signed him right away. So we know that he likes him, and what he brings to the game is a pass catching role. So he brings value. And I do think that DeAndre Washington will end up being somebody who you can flex most weeks. Regardless of that, though, I think that Damian Williams, who was outstanding in the playoffs last year, like flashed RB1, not overall RB1, but like top 12 running back, fantasy ability in the postseason when he was like finally healthy and everything last year. I think Clyde goes from battling for 15 touches a game to assuredly getting 18. And I think as the season goes on, he's going to be into the low 20s. So for me, this was Damian Williams opting out was a massive, gave Clyde Edwards-Helaire a massive boost in my rankings.
Yeah, I'm still, and this will be a theme as we approach the AFC and NFC deep dives. I am very nervous about rookies this year in terms of what their production is going to look like. And I understand that CEH is like walking into presumably this like excellent workload, especially without Damian Williams. But I'm wondering if there is a move that Casey is going to make in terms of signing a veteran back, maybe Devontae Freeman, who's still out there. Like, I don't know. I think he is going to price himself out of any range that I feel comfortable in taking, just because people are going to be so hyped on him with all of this free time that, like, if he goes, I mean, if he's going, you have him, you said he was your RB11, Nick.
Yeah. And I would draft him aggressively at his 28 overall ADP. I'd have no issue taking him in the second round.
Yes. End of the second round, beginning of third round, right? Like what you said with the 28th ADP, like that's where that would kind of be. That I have no problem with. My worry is him getting pushed up to like the beginning of the second or even end of the back end of the first, where it's like, meh, do I trust that he's going to be able to come in and be that impactful right away, especially on a wonky offseason? Not entirely sold, but it's certainly very good news for his fantasy value this year and for his fantasy value specifically to like start the season. Just his fantasy value through the one game of NFL that we will have this year. Little quick breaking news, not too much excitement here, but Quincy Enunwa was released by the Jets. So kind of a bummer, but there you go. Hasn't been able to stay healthy.
That Jameson Crowder stock.
Yeah, that Jameson Crowder stock is now getting sky high. But Quincy Enunwa has not been able to stay healthy for the Jets and was just released. So the hope, we'll see where he ends up. Finally in the news, I would say the thing to talk about is players are starting to get placed on the COVID reserve list. And we talked about this a little bit last week in terms of there were some rookies who were placed on it. There have been a couple big name guys who it's certainly to take note of. Now, this doesn't mean, again, that they have COVID, but it does mean that they were in contact or they possibly do have COVID. But names that have cropped up on that list, Matthew Stafford, Kenny Golladay, and TJ Hockenson for the Lions. Gardner Minshew cropped up for the Jaguars. And I also believe your boy, Nick, Ryquell Armstead appeared on that list. And then is there any other, Jalen Samuels got put there? Is there any other big name guys who I'm missing who I just know Matt Stafford and Gardner Minshew were kind of big names. James Washington also for the Steelers. But I think that's kind of it for big name guys. Is the COVID list, I guess, generally for you, like Nick, is the COVID reserve list worrisome for you at this point right now in terms of like actually having a draft impact in terms of what you're approaching fantasy wise? Or are you just kind of like, hey, I hope they're healthy, hope they get off the list, but it's not really having a massive impact in terms of your draft strategy right now?
Yeah, right now I'm not letting it bother me. If I find out that they actually have it, then okay. But given the fact that you can be on it just if you are known to have been around someone who had it, I mean, that's pretty quickly here going to be everybody. So, I don't just mean in football, it's going to be everybody. So, I'm not letting it bother me until somebody does have it. And somebody to monitor is Ezekiel Elliott, who did test positive. And that was a little while back. And he's spoken somewhat publicly about just kind of trying to catch his breath after it. I believe he did say that it has had some lingering effects on his ability to breathe. He's got a month. So yep. Hopefully he's good to go.
What about you, Jordan?
I'm just kind of thankful they're taking these sort of proactive steps to monitor people, whether or not they have like tested and tested positive for it with no symptoms, or if they were just generally running into people who might have tested positive for it. That's just good like contact tracing methods. I am a little bit worried about whether or not like other players start to see like how many people show up on this COVID list and they're like, no, look at all these people sitting on this COVID list. I have like young children, or I have like fragile people who might be in my home, and I'm sitting out the season now, even though I've had no reason to be like on a positive list. They just take it upon themselves to be out. So that's the worry that I've got right now until like we actually start to see like some Miami Marlins level like breakouts.
Yeah, and I think the NFLPA and the NFL have agreed on or tentatively have agreed on a final kind of things, which would put the opt-out date, I think, either Thursday or Friday this week. Go ahead.
Well, it just keeps getting bumped back. Yeah. Last week it was Monday, and then the press release was something to the extent of, or something to the effect of, opt-out deadline will be Tuesday or Wednesday, and then today it's Thursday or Friday. So they keep giving guys more time.
Yeah. So, but to your point, Jordan, that it means that with this time or this deadline kind of keep getting pushed back, we could start seeing more and more players opting out. All right. Well, that's it for the news. All right. Let's take a quick ad break before we go further.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we are back. Now let's get into some deep dive. So we'll start with the AFC South. And I also am realizing that I chose the South to start with because I felt like it was just a random place to start with, because normally you'd either start with the North or I guess like the East. I don't know. That's where my mind works. But I'm also realizing in a show that I know Clark was not going to be on, picking the AFC South is kind of a dick move. I'd be like, suck it, Clark. You don't get to talk about your favorite team. But nonetheless, here we are. So we're going to roll these out for each division. We are tackling the AFC and NFC South this week. And for each of these divisions, we have four players who we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about a must draft. So this is a guy in my mind who I'm thinking of like in the first 2 to 3 rounds who, like, if they are on the board when you are picking, you select this player wholeheartedly. No worries. There's no, you know, no issues. This is the guy you go with. You are happy. A league winner, who's someone who you think is going to outplay their current ADP to the point where, like, they could really make a big, you know, maybe they leap from their being drafted as a wide receiver 2 or a flex, and you think that they could be a wide receiver 1, that kind of draft. Someone you're not drafting, obviously, I think that's self-explanatory. I don't like the term bust. I think this is a better way of doing it. It's just someone who maybe at their price point, you're not confident in them producing at that level. Or you just have some worries about them, as opposed to like thinking that this player is going to just completely shit the bed and be awful in fantasy. It's just maybe you're not willing to pay what they're currently going at. Clyde Edwards-Helaire would be an example for me. And then a late sleeper, someone in the later rounds who you think could certainly give you some good return on your investment. So AFC South, this is a nice reminder that the AFC South really doesn't have much going on. But if we look at our must drafts, and we wrote these all down. Nick, you and I share the same must draft. And I think Derrick Henry, this is the first year where I feel like we can go into fantasy drafts being like 100% confident. Derrick Henry at his price point, you pull the trigger and you don't ask, like, you don't look back. This is the first time I feel like in his career where you do it and you're happy that you got him.
I agree that this is a point in his career where you should do that. I did encourage the listeners to do that last year.
Sure. Well done.
Yeah. Do you want to take the lead on explaining it, and I can fill in the gaps?
Sure. I mean, I guess for me, it's just like, you know that this Tennessee offense is 100% constructed around him. You know that they are going to give him a massive workload. They've signed him to a contract. Like, everything is here for Derrick Henry to repeat what we saw last year. Now, I'm not going to say he's going to repeat what we saw in the postseason last year, because I do think that was mildly an anomaly. But I do think that you're going to see Derrick Henry put together a full, complete season of being the workhorse guy. Like, every year so far, Derrick Henry has kind of ended that way. But at the start, the Titans have always seemed reluctant to necessarily give him the workload that he ultimately ends the season with. I think this is the season he's going to start with that workload. He's going to be a factor in the passing game with no Deion Lewis. He's going to be, obviously, the focal point in the ground game. I just think that he's going, what is the RB6 right now? Like, I would Dalvin Cook is going ahead of him currently. Alvin Kamara is going ahead of him currently. I personally would not mind Derrick Henry over both those guys. So I just think that Derrick Henry, I think you know exactly what you're getting when you draft him, and that is going to be a top five back unless he gets injured.
Yeah. So something we've talked a lot about is that going on Vegas win totals with Sharp Football, the Titans have a deliciously soft schedule, especially their run defense.
Deliciously. Slate. I like it.
Yeah. Derrick Henry's going to eat. He's going to get over 20 touches a game. And I like what you said about the fact that Deion Lewis is gone. They replaced him with Darrington Evans, who is a proficient pass catching back, but he's a rookie. And they have a total of 8 padded practices to get this guy insulated to get him into the playbook. What
involved
Deion Lewis? Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Deion Lewis, he had 32 targets last year. Henry only had 24. We've talked about it before. I think this is the year that Henry could actually get maybe like over 50 targets. His one screen pass that we all saw him house 75 yards out last year was just incredible. And the phrase that Evan Silva likes to use is defensive backs have to make a business decision when they see Derrick Henry barreling towards them, and it is a one-on-one situation with a hyper-athletic 250-pound man. Like, that's when you start thinking, like, okay, I got to sign a new contract a year from it. Like, I can't get hurt. So I really like this. I think Henry's got a massive workload incoming on a really, really soft schedule.
Yeah, agreed with anything. Or with everything. I was gonna pick Derrick.
Jordan's agreeing with anything. Whatever we say, he's on board with.
With anything, I was gonna pick Derrick Henry because I was just like, this feels like one of the most obvious AFC South choices, because without DeAndre Hopkins in the zip code anymore, it's kind of tough. And I definitely am like a little bummed. I feel like I'm a year too late on Derrick Henry, but this time around, if he's available at my draft spot, I'm definitely not going to be afraid to take him this year.
But so you ultimately didn't go with Derrick Henry, did you, Jordan?
No, I did not.
Elaborate on why you've chosen, Jordan, that Derrick Henry is not your must draft.
So my must draft, I wanted to go a little bit deeper. I went with DJ Moore just because I thought Moore had a productive year with bad quarterback play. Like, remember Kyle Allen was his quarterback for a little bit. Wait, was it Kyle Allen?
Just remember Kyle Allen in general. I know, as a
there
quarterback.
There was like two Allens playing at one time, like in Denver and Carolina. But he still managed again to have 135 targets last season. And I'm just kind of excited to see what Joe Brady is going to be able to do with this offense, see if he can bring in some new stuff. The big factor I will say is that with the Panthers red zone scoring offense, it was just utterly dominated by Christian McCaffrey. He scored 11 rushing red zone touchdowns, which is only second to Zeke Elliott. And then he also was just targeted in the passing game more than DJ Moore, 14 to 12, and he scored 3 touchdowns in the red zone. So I'm a little bit skeptical there. I'm just hoping that DJ Moore, with like a new offense, with a new coach, can kind of up his overall scoring output, because he only had 4 touchdowns last season. So I'm kind of hoping for a positive touchdown regression there. And part of that reasoning is because I just wanted to take a look at some of LSU's efficiency numbers. And I know that LSU college football is not the same as the NFL. But with that being said, they were still the number one ranked OFEI team, which represents the per possession scoring advantage a team's offense would be expected to have on a neutral field against an average opponent. They were number one in explosive drive rate and number 5 in touchdown rate. So I'm hoping that with DJ Moore being the clear number one option there, I mean, they've got Robbie Anderson and Curtis Samuel waiting in the wings. Christian McCaffrey is, of course, more of a pass catcher than a running back, I would say. I'm just hoping we get a little bit more out of DJ Moore, and you don't have to use a first round pick on him, and he might be a wide receiver one. So,
well, I really like this pick, but Do we, Jordan, do you have one for the AFC South?
Oh, shots fired.
Did we just jump to NFC South right away?
Well done, Nicholas, knowing how the divisions work. Because I was totally playing along. I was like, yeah, he's in the South.
I'm not gonna lie. I just jumbled me on more than one category, and I had to like backtrack a lot.
I do think it's worth pointing out that this overall speaks to both of these divisions seem to have a really narrow array of players to select from. Because I definitely ran into trouble looking at other options that you guys picked on the list and trying to avoid them. And it's interesting that some of these dudes we're talking about have such tremendously high ceilings. Like these guys, a lot of these dudes that we'll end up talking about, very good fantasy draft picks, but there really aren't very many of them. And it's interesting. And I guess I'm realizing that a lot of the AFC and NFC South are high powered offenses, but very narrow fantasy scoring trees, if that makes sense. And that's great. We like to find that, right? We want to see, get somebody got a ton of targets or a big workload coming their way.
Otherwise, AFC South, I wouldn't mind getting my hands on like AJ Brown or Deshaun Watson, because Deshaun Watson's going to be doing everything.
Yeah.
I guess it just depends on where he would fall. But without DeAndre Hopkins, I was just like really struggling to find somebody outside of Derrick Henry. And I ended up going outside the conference. So.
I ended up breaking all the rules just to find someone. All right, let's talk league winners in the AFC South. Nick, why don't you start us off?
Cool. So I feel kind of fiery about this one. Marlon Mack is going to be my league winner for the AFC South. He is currently going as the 86th overall player. When we're looking at the prospects of the Indianapolis Colts for 2020, and specifically the Colts backfield, we see Marlon Mack, Nyheim Hines, if you're so inclined, which is a bandwagon I've never been on, and Jonathan Taylor. Taylor is obviously a studly ball carrier. He does not bring really anything in the passing game. Mike Brenner on the ECR podcast a while back noted that he had dropped 8 of 50 targets. That's a very high number of dropped balls. So he's a one-dimensional dude. Now he's terrific, and he's going to be running behind one of the best offensive lines in the league. This is a schedule that's very similar to the Titans. It's soft as hell, both passing, but especially on the ground. I think Sharp Football has them as either the second or first softest slate of run defenses for 2020. So we love what this backfield, the prospects that this backfield has. A note from Sharp Football Stats.com, not their 2020 preview. Indianapolis had the third highest run rate in one score games in 2019. They like to pound the rock. But this is very similar to what I was talking about with Darrington Evans. There's no real offseason here. Jonathan Taylor, he's going to be good. And like I think he should be flexed or started as a running back too every week. But he's going significantly higher than Marlon Mack. And I think to start the season, this is going to be pretty close to a 50-50 backfield. And again, we have Marlon Mack coming off the board as the running back or as the 86th overall player. Meanwhile, Jonathan Taylor is going off the board 52. Like, give me the dude who's 30 draft slots lower. And I think for at least a third or half of the season, will be producing at the same or at least have the same opportunity afforded to him to begin the season. And something to keep in mind, I do like playing the long game. Obviously, like I was mentioning, DeAndre Washington is a great late round pick. The season could end halfway through. And if your league or you know, whatever high stakes league you're playing in just ends at like week 7, if Marlon Mack has not lost his rights to half the carries at that point in time, you are going to have a really high scoring running back. And, you know, Play to win early this year, because we don't know if we're going to get 17 weeks. We might only get a few. And if you're, you know, top scoring in your league, Marlon Mack's going to be in a great position to help you.
I will talk about Jonathan Taylor later, but I 100% agree with everything you just said.
I agree to a point in that I believe that Marlon Mack, just for the sake of Jonathan Taylor being a rookie, that he'll have a pretty firm grasp on just the playbook, the offense, you know, being able to work with his offensive line really well. But I just really do think it's a matter of time before Jonathan Taylor takes over. I just think he's a better player. And I think the Colts just, this is a, of course, a narrative, but I think they drafted him very highly for a reason, that they're just like eventually want to either replace Marlon Mack or they just liked JT a lot better. So if I'm going after Marlon Mack, I do like the idea of having him like that late in the draft and being like, all right, I'm just going to get out to a hot start and have him help me get propelled to 5, 6, 7 wins right away. Just get this late round guy, let him propel me, and I will hang on to my ass if I need a contingency plan later in the season.
Jordan, who's your league winner in the AFC South?
AFC South.
Okay. The Texans, Titans, Colts, or Jaguars?
So I'm here to give resident old man Clark Barnes some happiness. I'm going to stand in for him. I'm going to say league winner rolled the dice on David Johnson at 49th overall in draft value. It's the only reason I have him on here is 49th overall. I just feel like with this, he has a lot to prove. He was a running back who at a time was one of the best in the league, and then he just got completely shut down and replaced in Arizona, shipped off. He and Bill O'Brien have had to hear all offseason long how DeAndre Hopkins, who is a much better player in Arizona, definitely won that side of the deal. But they had to hear it all offseason long that they'd ship DeAndre Hopkins away for, you know, a busted running back and a bucket of nails or something like that. But I think that if David Johnson is healthy, that he will get a lot of attention from the offense, because I don't know why, I just feel like Bill O'Brien's one of those guys who's just like, I have something to prove here, and I'm going to make sure that I am seen as a smart football executive, and I will prove it by shoving the ball down David Johnson's throat. And you just kind of hope at 49th overall that maybe he, you know, touches a little bit of what he did in 2018, just a season ago, when he finished RB9 in PPR and RB10 in standard. This was before Kyler Murray, before they had even a resemblance of a running game in Arizona. It was a garbage offensive line. And again, I think it's pretty decent value, especially if for whatever reason you might have missed out on a couple of the running backs going ahead of him, like James Conner and Mark Ingram, both of whom I like better. But just in case you know, you had to settle for David Johnson, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world.
Foreshadowing, I'll address my thoughts on DJ a little bit later in the show.
Bing pot. Well, I am a fan of David Johnson. Obviously, I've spent many an hour on this show talking about my love for David Johnson. And I'll stick with the Houston Texans because my league winner is also on there and also was a part of a trade this year. And that's Brandon Cooks, wide receiver. Obviously, the Texans have a completely revamped receiving core now without DeAndre Hopkins. And you're opening up a shit ton of targets that someone's got to get. And I know Nick loves Will Fuller to take a bunch of those. And I love me some Brandon Cooks to take a bunch of those. Brandon Cooks, and I feel like I've said this on the show before. Maybe I haven't, but let's dive down Brandon Cooks' stat line. One of the things that I have often said that worries me is wide receivers transitioning to different offenses. We have seen it before where Odell Beckham, you've seen it, and this is one of the reasons people might have tempered expectations for DeAndre Hopkins this year. Brandon Cooks is a speed threat down the field, whom has played for 2016, 2017, 2018, played for three different teams, and each time racked up 1,000-plus yards and at least 5 touchdowns and at least 110 targets, no matter what. So that was with the Saints, with the Patriots, and with the Rams, and now he's going to the Texans, where there is a lack of a number one, true number one receiver there. They are going to be looking for that. I think Cooks can step right into there and pretty much effortlessly be a wide receiver one there. Obviously, the biggest worry with him is his recent history of concussions and staying on the field. That being said, he missed only 2 games last year for the Rams, and before that, was playing all 16 games without too much problem. So the concussions is certainly something to take into consideration and think about, but he is going as what? The wide receiver. If I was really good, I'd have this already up, but wide receiver 36, right below Will Fuller. Will Fuller's going wide receiver 35. So, and that's the 88 pick overall. So I just think that the value there is way too good to pass on him. I think he's my pick to be the number one wide receiver in Houston, by at least from a target standpoint. And so I'm buying him everywhere.
If you're, I have to reconsider. Okay, go for it.
I was just going to say, if you're targeting like one of Will Fuller or Brandon Cooks, especially if they go back-to-back like that, it's kind of just a race to see who might miss a couple weeks or a couple plays first, because it just seems like now that I'm like reflecting on it, when you're talking about Brandon Cooks' concussions and I just talked about David Johnson, I'm like, this team overall
has a lot of injury potential.
they have a lot of, like, even on the other side of the ball, whether that's JJ Watt or something like that, it's tough over there in Houston. I'm sorry, Clark.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't think we can take the concussion issue lightly. I think he has five of them. His production has severely dropped off as of late. It's a wide receiver changing team. I know he's had success doing that before, but that's, I think, more of an exception to the rule. I do think that Will Fuller is the top dog there. And I, for Cooks, is just, he's on like a do not draft list for me. If he falls terribly, then I could consider it, but there's just, I mean, you know, Fuller goes a few picks, four picks before him. Mac goes three before him. I prefer Gronk, Carson Wentz, Kerryon Johnson, Marvin Jones goes after. It's just an area where, I'm just not going to end up with any of him, because he's to me nothing more than just a like total flyer.
Beer bet, Brandon Cooks has a better season than Will Fuller fantasy-wise.
Yeah, done.
Done. All right, let's get to not drafting from the AFC South. And I'll start us off. I alluded to it. Jonathan Taylor, I'm not touching. He is currently going, and we've talked about this, but Jonathan Taylor is going as the running back, what, like 20-something? Jonathan Taylor, running back 24, 52 overall. Guys around him, David Johnson, David Montgomery, Raheem Mostert, Kareem Hunt is down there. I would rather have Kareem Hunt over Jonathan Taylor. Mark Ingram is right around there too. For me, it's like Nick was talking about, Marlon Mack. The Mack, I think, has this job locked down to start. Who knows if we're playing a full season. And maybe it's my own bias, I'm giving every rookie this year a big knock. Like, I just don't think that rookies are really going to make a true impact this season. Because of the weird offseason, I think it's going to just be a wonky season to come into. And especially if we're playing like 5 to 6 games before things get shut down, I don't trust Taylor to come in and kind of have the immediate impact that a lot of people are thinking, and that he's being drafted as an RB2. I don't think that he's going to produce that this year.
Yeah. So I touched on with the Mac section, Taylor, I think he's got a shot at 12 to 15 touches out of the gate. I think that's enough to be flexible every week. And I think that he'll have boom RB2 weeks. And I think as the season progresses, he will solidify himself as a running back too. But the cost to get him at the 52nd overall pick, that's beginning around 5, there's just a lot of quality around there. Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, I'm real into both of those
guys.
Hell yeah,
I take those guys ahead of them, no problem.
Yeah, and... You know, it's one of these decisions where there are offenses that are really high scoring, and it's nice to get exposure to them. But the way that I want to do that with Indianapolis is to just get Mac 30 picks later. But yep. I can't, he's so good in the offensive line there. I don't know. It's not for me, but I get it if somebody does pick him.
I don't get it. I don't understand or respect anyone who picks him. Jordan, you better not say you had picked him.
Well, this one, it just depends on how the draft board lies for me. Like, I can't reasonably say that I'm going to stay away from Jonathan Taylor altogether. I think that, like, with him and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, those are, like, the only two, like, rookies overall that I would think of, like, drafting in, like, the middle of the draft. The rest, I'm just like, yeah, whatever. We'll see what happens. Those two guys, though, I think are the only ones. Clyde Edwards-Helaire probably a little bit higher because it seems like he's got grasp on the starting job. But that's all I'll say on it.
All right. Well, you guys both have the same player who you're not drafting. And I don't know which of you wants to start us off yet, but but go ahead. Jordan, why don't you take it?
So, it's Leonard Fournette. I'm just not comfortable drafting him, especially not comfortable drafting him for as high as he's going right now in fantasy leagues. He's still kind of being drafted like he's a RB1, which is a little crazy. He was 34th in total rushing value last season, according to Football Outsiders, which is right under Nick's guy that he was just talking about, DeAndre Washington. So I think you can get a little bit better of a value for a total rusher if you just wait for DeAndre Washington to fall into your lap for possibly free, and he's probably the better runner. And one thing I looked at for Leonard Fournette and for the Jacksonville Jaguars last year is that there are a few guys on the line that I like that are pretty good, but they were just not very good at running or at run blocking last year. So per Football Outsiders, they have adjusted line yards, which basically measures how good an offensive line is at providing the rushing yards, and open field yards, which is how much the running back produces. So if a team has a low adjusted line yardage but a high open field yardage, that means they depend a lot more on the running back to produce rushing yards. And they were 27th in adjusted line yardage and 4th in high open field yards. So that just means they're dependent on Leonard Fournette to generate them rushing yards. And this guy is just a churner who is not going to get you a lot of very big explosive plays anymore. I think this might be a little bit of a reason why they got Chris Thompson in the backfield, just to get him a little bit more explosion. Rykel Armstead might be the guy after a month of the season, if they don't feel like they've got what they need out of Leonard Fournette, or if they actually find a trade partner.
It's just a bit of news. Adam Schefter has announced that the deadline for players to opt out is Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern time. But as far as Fournette goes, so Jay Gruden came to town. He brought his preferred pass catching back, like you just said, Jordan, in Chris Thompson. Last year, I was really high on Leonard Fournette because of the expected receiving game workload with one-year offensive coordinator John DeFilippo coming to town. He received exactly 100 targets. He got 76 of them for 522 yards, zero touchdowns. That's a lot of yardage. That's a lot of passing game opportunity, which carries way more value than rushing opportunity. That is just out the window. One, because Gruden's not going to give it to him, and two, because he's going to give that opportunity to Chris Thompson. So what you have is a bad running back that will get a high volume of carries, who's going 30th overall. The team has openly talked about trading him. They tried to trade him before the draft this year. He has had issues with what could be described as motivation, but also this fits underneath it, but like, we cannot forget last year having like his best usage season of his career. And he ends up, his quote from the bye week was, "Leonard, what did you do during your double bye week?" Because they had that weird, anyway. He said, "Nothing. I stayed in bed and ate gumbo every day." So he doesn't work out. The team wants to get rid of him. And now he's having his passing game usage taken away from him. Don't draft Leonard Fournette. It doesn't matter if he falls to the fifth round. Don't take this guy. He might get cut.
The contrarian in me really wants to come back with some hot take that, like, oh, and maybe if you guys noticed, he initially was my league winner because I was like, let's bring the fire.
And then
I went away from it because I was like, well, actually the fire would get doused real quickly. I do want to, I know. I think you guys have all brought up really good points about Leonard Fournette. I have been really back and forth on him this year, and I think ultimately you guys are probably right, and I probably will not draft him anywhere. But I do have a hard time letting go of someone who I don't know who else. I don't trust Chris Thompson to really be so much of an impact that he is like suddenly going to be a 100 target back in this offense. And I don't trust anyone else in this offense really to do, like, except for DJ Chark to do anything. And so I guess I have a hard time feeling like this offense isn't going to move on the legs of Leonard Fournette. And maybe it's going to be wildly inefficient, but give me 300 touches and 10 touchdowns. And just, I don't care how it gets done, but I'll take it.
So, I mean, let's do a beer bet that he's going to have under 5.5 touchdowns. The thing with I mean, so one, he was like impossibly bad in the receiving game last year. Average passes to running backs on average just go for like 7.1 or 7.2 yards. He was averaging like 5.2. Like you have to try to be that bad in the receiving game. That's off the top of my head. So if I got some decimals wrong, but
6.9 yards per reception. So pretty close to 7.
No, it might be per target. Anyway, or well, still, that's like, be better.
Yeah, he's 5.2 yards per target. 5.2 yards per target.
Okay. Hey, so I didn't have that. But anyway, the thing is, he before that, he had like 40-some targets per season, and I think the year after that, he had like 20-some, and then he went to 100. He's going to go back down to his norm, and whatever his norm is, that's then going to get hit by whatever Chris Thompson takes. So, like, anyway, I just...
It's fair. These are all fair things. I just have a... I think I'm leaning more towards you guys. He is just one of these backs who I feel like is in this, like, I am the offense workload. And I personally am someone who doesn't, I have yet to fully make the transition to like efficiency and beauty of actual play and being like, fuck it. If you get me points, I don't care how you get them to me. So we'll see how he ultimately, like, I do think that the biggest thing is I think you guys both hit it, and Nick's especially is like, the team doesn't want him. So that's not really a great sign. Or is it a sign that they're just going to run him to the ground? Who knows? All right, we got a lot more to talk about, and we are rambling on. So let's quickly buzz through our late sleepers for the AFC South. Nick, why don't you start us off?
Late sleeper, Duke Johnson Jr. David Johnson is not a good interior north-south runner. That is what Bill O'Brien does with his lead running backs. David Johnson has he had a lingering back injury last year. He's got a pretty extensive injury list, and we like to have our game where we joke about the fact that he hurt his wrist. Well, now it's a back, and back injuries don't go away. I don't know if I just said this already because I'm trying to speed through it, but he's 29 years old. He's at the precipice of when running backs fall off a cliff completely. He's going – there's the dog. He doesn't like David Johnson either. Yeah, I mean, DJ's, he's going in like the fourth or fifth round, and instead you can get Duke Johnson Jr. In some leagues he's not being drafted, and in others he's going as the 149th overall pick. I think Duke has a shot at a workload of like 8 touches per game with DJ in there, and if DJ gets hurt, which I'm surmising that he will, then he's got access to like 18 touches per game. There's nobody else on the depth chart that I'll have to compete for, and, you know... How can you can't really have a bad 149th pick in the draft.
It's fair. Jordan, we are both, I think we're both talking about potential number two weapons in the Indianapolis Colts offense. Am I wrong in saying that?
Yeah. You are.
Damn it.
I'll go with mine because I just don't know how much mine is a sleeper, so I can just breeze through it. Does Philip Rivers count as a sleeper?
Sure, take it. Go ahead.
This kind of ties into one of my NFC South talking points, but it's Philip Rivers because he's QB 23 and 148th overall, and I'm just kind of like, you know what? Playing in a dome, new team, new motivation. Like an actual real NFL offensive line to stand behind and deliver passes to is always good. And it's one of those, especially if you're the type of drafter who you're like Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson or bust. Oh, I didn't get them early in the draft. I'm waiting until you get to the point where there aren't any QBs left on the board, but possibly Philip Rivers and his 11 children. So who knows?
I mean, and maybe we weren't both talking about potential number two receivers. I am talking about potential number two receiver. I like Paris Campbell as a deep late sleeper for this offense because, again, my personal bias against rookies this year, Michael Pittman Jr., I don't think is going to necessarily come in and shock the world and be that number two receiver for the Colts. I think ultimately it'll probably play out T.Y. Hilton, Jack Doyle, and then I think Paris Campbell is going to be the guy who kind of comes in and fills that role. When he started last year, he only played, what, 7 games last year. When he started, though, he saw at least 5 targets. He had 3 games in which he started. He had 5 targets in 2 of those and 8 in another one. So when he's on the field for the most amount of snaps, he gets involved in the offense. And I think just having even just one extra year in the system, I think this could be a year where he emerges as a real potential weapon and probably a solid flex contributor in this year.
Yeah, truth be told, this was a guy that I actually wanted to talk about, but didn't want to have it doubled up. Yeah. The only thing I'm going to add is that as far as I understand, reports indicate currently that Campbell has the inside track to getting the slot receiver role, which obviously Phillip Rivers has been peppering with targets for as long as we can remember.
Bingo.
Yeah, we would have ended up tripling up on it too. But I saw that you had Paris Campbell on it, and I'm just like, no.
Yes! Well, there you go. This is Paris Campbell gets a full thumbs up from the RB1 podcast. All right. Well, we quickly, little peeling back the onion curtain, we just had a conversation, the three of us, about whether or not we want to talk about the NFC South. And we decided, you know what? We've already been talking for an hour. Why do the injustice to the South? As Jordan said, really, the NFC South is actually more exciting. Somehow, we talked about the AFC South, which really just offers Derrick Henry for like 45 minutes. So props to us for just kind of spouting things and going on tangents. But anyways, we want to give the NFC South the respect it deserves. So we are going to actually save that for Wednesday's / coming out on Thursday's show. So you will listen to that then. We are just going to leave the AFC South for this episode. So that's all we got. So make sure you subscribe to the Fake Teams podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, we are there. And that's how you'll not only get us, but our fantasy baseball and basketball podcasts. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at RB1 Podcast. You can follow myself at Pete M. Rogers. Follow Jordan at Jordan _ Smith 27 and Nick at Ginger _ Nick without a K. We will be back at you on Thursday. Congratulations to Clark Barnes, who got married over the weekend. What? So he'll be on to hopefully tell us how that went. Until then, peace.